What if I told you we may have cracked the Facebook marketing code for motivated house sellers? Now, this is for real estate investors. This is for real estate agents. If you're looking for people who are looking to sell their houses, we found some amazing ways to make that happen on Facebook with Facebook ads. Now, we rolled out a Facebook course here at Carrot called the Facebook Leads Masterclass several months ago, teaching some methods and some strategies. And the cool thing is, guys and gals, the cool thing is we've innovated on them even more. And we've even brought on an amazing, amazing guest today who I would say we've learned a ton from on his strategies in the past several months on what's working for them. And one of the ways that we've learned what's working for them on Facebook to consistently and predictably and at a good ROI get motivated house sellers through Facebook ads in almost any city across the country is because we see the data. We see behind the scenes, we see the data of where these leads are coming from in our Investor Carrot customers' websites that he is managing their ads. And he's managing their Facebook ads for many, many different customers of ours. And so we can see behind the scenes where we saw one client in one market go from all of their leads being SEO leads, and then they started stacking on Google pay-per-click in a good way. And they started seeing their leads going, adding on some pay-per-click ones. So maybe a third of those leads came from pay-per-click now. And then they added on Facebook marketing about 3 months ago. And now a good one-third to one-half of all of their motivated seller leads are coming from Facebook. Now, this doesn't mean that their leads in the other sides of things are going down. What this means is their overall lead count's going way up. They're just stacking on. They're just stacking on different types of leads and different types of lead generation into the mix. Okay, so what we're going to be diving into today is walking through how you guys can use Facebook more effectively this next year, the year after that, hopefully, with Facebook ads. We're talking about not making one post on your Facebook page. We're not talking about posting daily and doing all kinds of stuff. We're talking about launching ads effectively for motivated house sellers. Now, you can use the same thing for cash buyers. You can use the same thing for tenants. But house sellers traditionally are the harder type of lead to get a hold of on Facebook. We've kind of cracked that code. And Kylie Newbold, our guest, is going to be diving into what he does to do that. Now, Kylie's a pretty special dude, and we're so glad and fortunate to have him on here and have him working with us and some stuff. But Kylie was the guy, his last job, guys and gals, he just jumped into being an entrepreneur himself the past month or two, which we want to celebrate that in this call. But his previous job, he was the vice president of marketing and technology at a $75 million a year company. It was a big company that you guys have probably heard of called the Color Run. It's one of those outdoor kind of obstacle course runs, where they throw color bags at you and stuff like that. Really, really cool company. Really, really cool mission that they have. And Kylie was huge and instrumental in helping to grow their business, leveraging Facebook. And he took that knowledge and that expertise at that high level, and he brought it over to real estate. And we're going to be showing you guys what you can do as real estate investors and agents to leverage Facebook better. Hold on, guys and gals. We talk a lot about Kylie's story at the start, and then we talk about process. And toward the back third, we really talk great, great, great detail of exactly what you should do with your Facebook ads to crush it in this market. And if you're an Investor Carrot member, reach out to us if you want to start doing some more Facebook marketing, because we would love to see how many people are out there looking for Facebook marketing help, Facebook ad management, things like that, and just to gauge to see if there's a service that we can launch for you. So let us know at support@oncarrot.com if that's something you're interested in, so we can kind of gauge that support. Now, without further ado, let's bring in Kylie Newbold. I know one of the topics that you guys listening to these Carrot Casts love the most are the marketing topics. I'm actually surprised some of the topics that are getting listened and downloaded the most are like productivity and things like that. And then right behind that are the marketing ones. So we're going to be doing a lot more marketing calls, a lot more marketing Carrot Casts this year. So kind of strap in and get ready for some in-depth detail marketing stuff this year, this season with the Carrot Cast. And we're going to start off with this one. And this is probably the most asked for topic on the marketing side of things of late. you know, other than SEO and pay-per-click and all that kind of stuff, is Facebook marketing. And Facebook marketing by itself isn't new. It's something that's been around for, you know, several years, but I think it's this industry, the real estate industry, real estate investors, agents, has really started to grab onto it the past year, faster than any other previous year. And, there's certain reasons for that. We're going to talk about some of those reasons here, but I've got one of the best guys to talk about this topic on today's CarrotCast, and it's, Kylie Newbold. So Kylie, welcome on the CarrotCast, man.
Thanks, Trevor. Happy to be here. Love the podcast and honored to be a guest.
Sweet. And for those of you watching the video version of this, Kylie's actually a pretty darn good artist. If you guys look at the whiteboard behind him, before this call, he sketched out a carrot. That's a pretty damn good carrot. So if you're listening to this on iTunes or on Stitcher or something like that, you guys are missing out on the visual version of it, but you guys can pop over to carrotcast.com. Check out this episode if you want to watch it on video, or stay on iTunes if you just love listening to it. So either way it works. But the reason I wanted to bring Kylie on this episode of the CarrotCast, guys and gals, because we've been doing internally a lot of Facebook marketing the last year and a half to 2 years. We've really made it work very well for us, especially the past 6 to 8 months. And we've started to really make it work well for a lot of clients as well the past 3, 4, 5, 6 months. But the missing piece in Facebook for real estate investors for several years has always been, how do you turn Facebook into motivated sellers, right? Because it's easy to turn Facebook into buyers, into tenants, rent-to-own tenants. But the seller piece was always kind of harder for people to crack into. And there's several ways we found, but what Kylie is doing, and you guys are going to be listening to what he's doing today and what he's doing for his clients, what he's doing is working like gangbusters. And it's not something that I'm just taking his word for it. He's doing it with a lot of our Carrot customers, and we can see the data. Like, we see what's happening behind the scenes, and we're like, we got to get Kylie on because whatever he's doing is working. So once again, glad to have you on, man. And I'm just really looking forward to a good conversation.
Awesome.
So we're not going to start on the Facebook side. And I know that's exactly why people are coming in, but I'm really fascinated about entrepreneurs in general. I'm really fascinated about the mindset that people have and how they succeed. And dude, your background is really, really interesting. To me anyway, and I think it will be to a lot of people. Where were you before you started doing what you're doing right now for real estate investors?
Yeah. So most previous to coming over to what I'm doing now, I was working with a company called The Color Run, which is a big 5K event company. I think a lot of listeners probably heard of it, or at least seen the images on social media. It's the 5K where you get blasted with colored powder. And so I joined actually that team in its infancy when the company was just starting, was part of that startup team. And we built that thing from zero to 50 countries, over 5 million runners coming across the finish line. And a lot of that was done on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And that's so I'd done Facebook marketing prior, but did a lot of that on Facebook. And we had a blast. It was amazing doing something that genuinely put good out in the world. You know, we made a lot of people happy. And of course, it was a lot of fun too. And just a few months ago, I just started to feel like that chapter of my life had was ending, and it was time for something new. And have always been an entrepreneur at heart. The Color Run, prior to The Color Run, I was involved with another startup as well. So I knew I loved startups, but had yet to truly do my own thing. And so a little bit ago, I said goodbye to The Color Run and struck off on my own. And part of the reason I did that too was, you alluded to this, Trevor, I saw in the real estate investment market specifically so much blue ocean in regards to Facebook. And that got me really excited.
Dude, I love it. And I'm looking on your LinkedIn page, and like, so one of the reasons I'm so fascinated is because you're not just a dude who, you went and found an online course and you've done Facebook marketing for a couple people, and then you're like, hey, I'm going to try it out for these guys. And you're kind of dinking around with it. I mean, you weren't just a dude at Color Run. You were the vice president of marketing technology. Like, you were the guy pushing forward that strategy. And that's a big deal for a company that is well in the tens of millions of dollars, especially since you said that a lot of their marketing was driven off of Facebook. And, to me, that's one of the most exciting things that a lot of real estate investors and entrepreneurs in general, I think don't tap into, is that they're always looking for those experts or those people that are in this little niche. They don't look outside of our industry to find who's crushing it in another industry, and I can apply that skill set to what we're doing. And that's what you did. You applied the skill set that was working in a massive way in this other industry. You're going, if I can tweak a couple things because I understand Facebook so well and how people use it, I can make it work well over here.
Yeah, that's actually something I'm super passionate about is if you're on my LinkedIn, if you look at that, I've been in several different industries which are pretty unrelated. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've absolutely loved is coming into a new industry and then dissecting it, taking what are some sort of universal truths about marketing and what works and specific to Facebook marketing, and applying that in that industry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty exciting that you can kind of carry that past knowledge with you. But it's also really fun just cracking a new nut, you know, which is what I'm doing now in the real estate space. And it's been a lot of fun.
Dude, so kind of breaking down some of your Color Run time there, because I'm very familiar with Color Run. Been lots of runs here, seen tons of friends go through it. I didn't go through it.
Yeah.
I did do the Tough Mudder one time, man.
Oh, nice.
That was an ass kicker.
I know those guys at Tough Mudder, good guys. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a blast. But I know lots of people have gone through the Color Run. So looking at that, I'm just like, man, Kylie somehow, some way, probably played a role in getting them there. What did you enjoy the most about your time at the Color Run?
Oh, that's a great question, man. I mean, the people that work there, absolutely amazing. And certainly lots of things I miss about being in that office every day, but one of those is the people. And it really was because there was so much passion there about what we were doing. Our PR inbox would get emails from people who had used the Color Run as a catalyst to, get themselves back into shape or to overcome smoking, or people who would celebrate remissions from cancer or memorialize a loved one's life by the Color Run, I'm still really passionate about the live event space. I think there's so much cool opportunity there. And, so I love that. I also loved that the brand was so colorful and vibrant that it gave us a lot of opportunity to try fun things. Mm-hmm. And then, to bring it back to Facebook, because of how well Facebook was working for the Color Run, we invested more and more into that. And unique opportunity to go so deep into a channel that I think some companies don't get to do because they haven't cracked the ROI nut on Facebook, but we did. And so that was really cool as well. And then I know you told me to pick one. I guess I can't answer.
I love it.
We got to see cool places. The Color Run goes all over the world, and I didn't personally go to all those events, but seeing something that you helped build with the Eiffel Tower in the background, like that's pretty impactful. Yeah. So, yeah.
Dude, so I'm going to kind of transition this convo now to what you're doing now. And we've talked before on the phone about this topic, about this kind of passion and what you do and making sure that you tie it to a real why at your core that like, man, you feel like you're not wasting your time, like you're contributing and marching towards something that you care about on the impact you can make. So all of this passion and the fun and the difference you guys are making at Color Run, of course, that's behind you now as far as your role with that. And you left the Color Run about a month ago from the time that we're recording this, around there, you give or take. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing now, if anything, to kind of bake some of that or be intentional with, maybe it's not in there now, but that you will build that in into your business that you're running now? Like, how are you bringing some of that passion, some of that purpose into what you're doing now?
Yeah, that's really top of mind for me. Like you said, you and I have talked about it on the phone, and there's a couple things right now that are really driving that passion. And one of those is something I alluded to earlier, which is this idea that there's some blue ocean here in this industry of, and really an opportunity for me to make a big impact, certainly for myself, of course, to kind of carve out that niche, but also just for the industry and for the people in the industry as well, to kind of help set maybe some best practices or some standards to sort of help clear out some of the clutter and noise that I think exists in the industry. And then the other thing that's really driving me right now, you know, I work with real estate investors, so I'm working with entrepreneurs on a daily basis as well. So I get this beautiful side benefit of just feeling their passion on the phone, you know. And the guy who helped get me into this industry, his name's Cody Hoffine. His passion sort of for real estate investment got me excited as well. And, you know, so now for myself, my eyes are open and I'm going, okay, it would be crazy for me to be so exposed to real estate and not figure out the right way for me to also have some investments, right? So I have no plans to start wholesaling or whatever, but I'm looking for rentals.
Cool.
You know, so yeah.
Cool. I love it, man. And I'm kind of the same way in the real estate side. I love personally real estate for the wealth building activity. I'm not a wholesaler, never have been. I've wholesaled one property in my life and that was an accident. And, but I really love doing something that I'm crazy passionate about that I can make a big difference on my active income side and then piling some of that money into real estate or other assets that can grow. So, yep, sweet, man. I like it. So let's kind of transition over to the Facebook side because that's why people, I think, are listening to this call. And I know just kind of going through some of my experiences with Facebook, right? So you launch a Facebook ad because someone says you should be using Facebook. They throw some dumb picture on there. They drive it to their homepage. They don't do anything else. Their targeting is probably like just targeting everyone in the world or everyone within 100 miles of X, but there's no specific way that they're actually guiding them down a path to convert and build credibility. And that's why I think a lot of people were saying that Facebook doesn't work for sellers very well, or that it gets too expensive. That was kind of the complaint before. It was like, man, I'm getting sellers, but it's way too expensive the way that they were doing it, which I agree, the way they were doing it was. Yeah. So what do you feel are some of those biggest, you know, shortfall or pitfalls or mistakes that people are making currently with Facebook, especially for motivated house sellers?
Yeah. So I think there's a few of them. And as I work, especially with new investors who maybe have just got their website up or, maybe they just transitioned to a new website, one of the challenges in the beginning as you start driving traffic to a website, I always think of digital marketing as an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So inside of that ecosystem, you've got Facebook, you've got PPC, you've got SEO, you've got search, et cetera, right? But your first month of online marketing typically is going to be one of your hardest and least productive mm-hmm. because you're really you're cutting new trail everywhere you go. Right? If you think about it that way. So that's the first mistake I think I see people make is that they don't commit to seeing it through, mm-hmm. right? They throw an ad up, they let it run 2 weeks, maybe even they let it run 30 days and they spent a couple hundred bucks and they go, this doesn't work, mm-hmm. right? So the level of commitment, I think, is a mistake. And just one more note on that. One of the most effective pieces of marketing you can do on Facebook is remarketing or retargeting. Yeah. And in your first month, you really can't do much of that mm-hmm. because if you're only driving 10 people to your site a week, your retargeting pool just isn't growing to the point where it's going to really be substantial or impactful, yeah. right?
Dude, before you move on to the second one, I want to kind of unpack that first one a little bit because we see the same thing on all types of marketing. It could be direct mail, it could be SEO, pay-per-click, Facebook, whatever. And one thing that will guide people to do, and I'm sure you guys do the same thing, is you kind of work backwards. You go, okay, what is the end game? What's our average profit per deal or per transaction or whatever it is that we're aiming for or that we can get? And then you kind of work backwards and go, okay, the way that we do it anyways, what's our average profit per deal? Yeah. How many, what's our revenue goal or whatever? Or what ROI are we okay with? You know, if your average profit deal is 15 grand, are you okay with paying 15 grand to get the deal? Or, right. or you want to pay no more than five, you know, based yes. on your numbers. So now you've got your target. Then you work back and go, okay, how many leads does it usually take me to close a deal with your current marketing? So let's say it's 1 out of 20. If you're doing some Facebook stuff, some offline stuff, a little bit of online stuff. If you're doing pure SEO, we oftentimes see 1 in 10 to 1 in 15, just pure SEO. But if you're fitting some Facebook stuff in there, it's probably 1 in 20 around there. So now it's like, okay, we need 20 leads to get a deal to close that $15,000 deal.
Right.
How do I get, you know, so then you're looking at going, okay, really, we're talking, if you're willing to pay $5,000 to get your $15,000 deal, which is your average, and you only need 20 leads to close a deal, you divide that number up, and that's the max that you should pay per lead. So we're going 5,000. I stopped 50,000. That would have skewed the numbers a little bit. 5,000 divided by 20. And these are all estimates, of course, guys and gals. If you're profiting way less per deal, just work the numbers. If your average leads per deal are different, whatever, add a buffer in there. But we're talking $250 per lead then, you know? So if you're saying, man, that some people are going in a month and they get their 4, 5, 6, 7 leads or whatever it is, and they pay $200 or $400 or $1,000 for those leads, if they haven't got to their 20 leads yet, they should not be stopping because they didn't even get enough leads to have their numbers work for them yet.
Right.
And so if you guys are working your business that way, you have to be working on it based off of this calculation. Otherwise you are going to quit too early. You're going to be injecting emotions into your marketing versus using your data.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And like you said, that's not just true of Facebook, right? That's true of any marketing channel. And I think, at any given point, you've got, what does it cost you to get a lead? And then what percentage of those leads do you convert? And I think those two areas are two areas business owners have to be thinking about all the time.
Yeah.
And because you can get your cost per lead way down in theory, but if those leads aren't closing, then it doesn't matter, right? If your cost per lead is higher, but you close a higher percentage of them, then it's great. But it all comes back to that metric that you mentioned, Trevor, which is what am I, you know, I call it CPA, your cost per acquisition. What is the maximum I'm willing to pay in order to get a deal?
And guys and girls, I'm going to toss you guys over to a resource. Actually, if you're listening to this or watching this, go to oncarrot.com/ROI. So oncarrot.com/ROI. We actually have an ROI calculator that does that calculation for you for your online marketing. So I'm hopping over there and you guys can check it out on your own, kind of put your own numbers in there, but oncarrot.com/ROI and put your typical profit per deal at the top. How many leads does it close take to close the deal in that next one? What your cost per click is, or, you know, we're probably going to adjust this to cost per lead or give people the choice to choose one. But right now it's cost per click. And then what's your website conversion rate? And if you have those numbers decently dialed in, it's going to tell you, you know, what your minimum marketing budget per deal should be based on those numbers. And then our assumption with the 30% buffer on what your maximum budget will probably be. Then you can, of course, raise that maximum budget higher if you're willing to bring your ROI a little bit down. But just use that tool, see if it works for you guys to nail your number, and hit me back with feedback.
So. I'm just looking at it as well. That's an awesome tool.
Yeah, we just on calls and stuff, we'd always be working this calculation with people. And the funny thing was I had so many notepads on my desk with that calculation on it.
Yeah, sure.
I'm like telling Alex and my team, like, Alex, can we just whip up something really quick that does this calculation? And it's not perfect, of course. There's, like I said, there's some adjustments. We're going to adjust it so you can choose if you're doing direct mail marketing, if you're doing whatever, so it changes the vernacular in there. But in general, it's going to get you a number that's going to give you a good idea. And for me, the most important number there, honestly, is for most people, is that minimum you should spend before you quit. Because like you said, they quit too early because they're using emotion versus data. And I'm gonna finish with this one thing before we move on to the next point that you had was, when people look at competition, guys that you're managing Facebook for, as an example, and they go, oh my gosh, how are these guys crushing me with Google AdWords or with whatever marketing, direct mail, with Facebook, whatever it is. If they haven't managed well and they know their numbers well, they're willing to spend more than you. And they can crush you in the market because they know their numbers. If you don't know your numbers, you're going to stop spending money before you should. And your competition who knows their numbers are going to keep on spending and flush you out of the market.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, you know, I've had this conversation a lot of times in my career, and as I manage the team over at the Color Run, I'd often have this conversation with other leaders in the company or other people in the industry asking us how we handled our budget. You know, how did we set up when we're going to 130 cities in the United States in a given year? How are we setting the budget for each city? And the analogy I'd give them, Trevor, is I'd say, if we find a vending machine that I can put a dollar into and it gives me $2 back, then why would I say I'm only going to put $10 in that vending machine? Yeah. I'm going to put as much money in that vending machine as I can until the vending machine stops giving me $2 back, right? And that's the way I think about – that's the way I approach my own marketing budget in any environment is – and I think that's exactly what you're saying, right? So these competitors, they know that. They know they found their vending machine, right? And so they're smart and they keep putting that dollar in over and over and over again. And why wouldn't you?
I love it. I love it, dude. So what are some other pitfalls that people are seeing when they're using Facebook?
So the other one I think kind of leads into from what we were talking about, and that's sort of a paralysis of looking at the numbers every single day. So, you know, now certainly it's smart to look at your data and to know what's going on, but especially on an ad platform delivery like system like Facebook or Google AdWords or whatever it is, like there's going to be some pretty big fluctuations on a day-to-day basis. And some of that depends on the ad performance for the day, but some of that also depends on just the algorithms that Facebook uses to deliver the ads or that Google AdWords uses to deliver the ads. So I think one of the mistakes you can make is getting in there every single day and kind of freaking out about what happened on that given day. So my general rule of thumb is you got to at least look at it a week at a time. Meaning you got to take in 7 days worth of data before you kind of get a picture of how are things looking, right? And it might even be better to look at it in 14 or 30 days, depending on what you're spending and et cetera. But I do see people kind of, they'll put up an ad and the first day it's up, it doesn't do very well and they shut it off, right? I think you've got to have a lot of campaign history to make a decision that quickly, which most people in this industry don't, right? So I think that's a mistake. The other pitfalls I think are testing too many things at once, you know, and that's just kind of simple. Like how do you perform a proper split test or a proper A/B test? Right. And I think people will put up a bunch of different images or a bunch of different copy and then they get done and they don't really know what they learned. And my favorite way to get around that is before you start any kind of test in your marketing, even if you're going to split test some direct mail, right, is you have to ask yourself the question, how will I know the answer to, first of all, what question do I want answered? And how will I know if I was successful, right? How am I going to answer that question? And if you can clearly define how you're going to answer that question, then that helps you set up that test appropriately.
So how many, if you're launching a new campaign, how many ads are you running? I guess, what does that structure look like? Is it one ad with just two pictures you're testing, or are you testing completely different ads?
Yeah, good question. So I will typically test image and then copy. So that's not always the case, but I guess what I'm saying is if I want to test an ad, I need to test it in phases, right? So I might put up three versions of the same ad. So the copy is the same on all three, but the image is different.
Gotcha.
Right? Then I'll see which image wins. Then I'll take that image and I'll test three different versions of the copy.
Cool.
Right? And then I might take from that and test three different versions of now minor variations of the call to action line or whatever it is. But I think the mistake people make is they say, okay, I've got this image with this copy and this image with this copy and this image with this copy. And now you've got three different ads. And if one of them works, that's awesome. But you don't really know what made the difference because you didn't approach it systematically.
Yeah. You don't know if it's the copy that hit this thread that with that prospect that, man, that thread that the copy hit nailed it, or if it was the orange bar around the pick, whatever it was, you know. It's funny. We do lots of Facebook marketing on our end, and we really want to ramp things up. We have found, for us anyway, that the image, like you're saying, tends to make the biggest impact is it's the visual. People are sitting there scrolling down Facebook, and it's usually the image that catches you. Then the image should drive you to the copy. And that's what you're talking about. There's test and try to find the image that's grabbing the person, that's resonating with them. And then the copy is then what pushes them further down that funnel or down that decision tree to actually click on that link. Good stuff, man. Any other pitfalls before we kind of dive into campaign and ad structure?
I think the last pitfall would be, and they all kind of tie together. I think you'll see a common theme. The other one is making massive changes on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of reasons this is a problem. One of them is Facebook is a little finicky. You know, every month, sometimes every 2 weeks, I get an email from a Facebook rep that tells me like all the updates to the Facebook platform and the Facebook product. And they change things all the time, right? So, but one of the things that can happen is if, for example, if you see an ad that's working really well and you go in and 10x the budget, that actually can have a detrimental impact sometimes in your deliverability, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you, again, like if you see an ad isn't working 3 days in and you go in now and just totally put up a whole different ad, that's not necessarily the right thing either, right? Maybe what you ought to have done is just added one more image to that ad set and see if that makes a difference, right? So, and I think you said it perfectly, Trevor. I think emotion plays a role in a lot of this because it's real money, right? Like if I've spent $300 and I don't have anything to show for it yet, if I don't have any frame of reference of what that means, so coming back to your tool, if I don't know, well, I really need to spend probably $3,000 before I know. I'm just making this number up. Then that $300 doesn't feel as painful, right? But if I just go into it and I've dropped $300 and nothing has happened, then I'm going, I'm throwing money away. Mm-hmm. I'm burning money, right? So,
dude, so it's funny. So your pitfalls that you mentioned, pretty much all of them equal less work for people. It equals not having to go in there and micromanage the campaign all the time. It equals not creating 42 ads at once. It equals it's simplifying your process, but yanking emotion out of it, nailing the numbers, trusting the process, having a long-term outlook on it, and not fiddling with crap, honestly. So, I've got a lot of questions here for you, and hopefully we'll be able to fit them in here in the next 20 minutes. And maybe we'll have you back on for a second one, but I know you're managing traffic, Facebook traffic for a good amount of Carrot clients. And I don't exactly know how many, but I know it's multiple. And I know, before we were hopping on here, I said, man, I'm in this client's website. And before Carrot, they were crushing it with Carrot, you know, Google AdWords, their AdWords campaigns were way more effective with Carrot. They actually stopped their AdWords campaigns before, moved over to Carrot, launched the same campaign, crazy profitable for him now because of our websites and the performance. And he's starting to rank well on Google, and his leads are, you know, they used to be showing Google pay-per-click sources, Google pay-per-click, 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 SEO, you know, it's Google organic. And now over the past month and a half to 2 months, it's probably at least one third to half of all their leads, which they get a lot of leads, are from Facebook now. And they're still getting a lot from Google pay-per-click, a lot from search, and they're closing a lot of deals in the Florida market. So we know this stuff works, and that's a cool thing. Before we dive into structure, how much are you finding with your clients? Because I'm sure you have a lot of clients who are not Carrot clients too. How much are you finding the actual setup of the website and the performance of the website is making a difference in the campaign's success?
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And I'm not saying this just because I'm on your podcast right now. This is the honest truth. I've had several customers that have switched to Carrot from their website that someone on Fiverr or whatever built for them. And that's because Carrot is built to be a conversion funnel. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these websites weren't, right? So, I mean, not to go too technical, but for example, there are websites where when someone clicked the submit button on the form, it didn't fire a new URL, right? So you can't track that. You can't, on the back end, technically, you can't track where that lead came from if there's not a true destination URL on a conversion, right?
Yeah.
And so, or the way the website was set up was not very conversion rate friendly, right? So, I got sidetracked. What was your question specifically? I'll make sure I answer it.
No, you're good, man. It was how much does the actual website you're driving them to matter in the success of your Facebook marketing?
So the quick answer to that question is massively, right? I mean, you think about it this way. This is what I tell clients on the phone. Facebook's job is to capture eyeballs and get them to your website. Your website's job ultimately is to convert them. Now, of course, both have to work together, because if on Facebook, you know, the ad says free beer and $1 million and then you get to the website and it's not there, no one's going to convert, no matter how good the website is. But if you push a lot of great traffic to a bad website, it's not going to work, right? The website's job really is to get people to take action. And you know, really quick on that note, I think some things that Carrot has built in, but not everyone takes advantage of, but also on non-Carrot clients, I'm seeing, and this is a bit anecdotal because I haven't pulled full data and looked at it, but that people who have some personalization on their website, the conversion rate is better. So what I mean by that is a video with the investor saying, "Hey, I'm Kylie. I buy homes in XYZ city. Here's how it works," or some actual testimonials. That makes a big difference, which intuitively for me makes a lot of sense, because anytime, you know, with the color run, anytime we could put a personality to who we were as a brand, or anytime we can make them feel like we're not just some nameless company, you know, we're not just a big corporation. We have a soul, and, then it would work better. And I think that's true for investors too.
Dude, it's totally true. And kind of without diving down this rabbit hole too much, because I could talk on this topic, man, forever, is on the credibility side. Our data has shown over and over again that the credibility is a massive thing for performance. And with Carrot, of course, we do the best we can do to out of the box give you the thing that's going to perform great. But then it's up to you, up to people to then personalize it and build that personality. And if you look at the marketplace right now, so you look at home prices are up in many markets. Some of them have softened up the last 6 months, but they're up versus 3 years ago. When appreciation happens, more people jump in to want to be a real estate investor. So they start wanting to flip houses or wholesale or whatever. So that drives competition for those same leads. Also, your sellers have multiple ways to sell their houses now. 4 years ago, they didn't. Like it was really hard to sell it on the MLS. They might not have had the equity. So then you're looking at short sale or an investor to buy your house, or you sit on it and hold it. But now the sellers with that equity now, they can sell on the MLS fast. Yeah. They can probably list it themselves and sell it way better than they could have years ago. There's other options. There's investors, but now there's more investors. The reason I'm bringing all this up is all that equals more clutter and competition. So how do we cut through that clutter on your website? It's by not being a nameless, faceless corporation. It's by, hey, this is me. I can buy your house. Here's how I can help you. Here's my unique selling proposition that's a little bit different than theirs. Oh, by the way, look at my about page and see that I'm a real human being in person. And oh, by the way, here's other people I've helped. So now you feel like you're not the only one or the first one to work with them. And our data has shown, we did a blog post on it a couple of years ago, actually, the data is still the same, that the number three most visited web page on all of our clients' sites, and it always has been. Then we started to look outside of this industry. It's always the about page.
Yeah.
Always the about page.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
So that's critical. Go for it.
Sorry, Trevor. I just want to add one more thing, and it'd be interesting what data you're seeing too. But I'm seeing that, you know, there's a fair amount of people that don't convert on their first visit to the website, which is not unique. You know, all industries have that challenge, especially when you're doing social media advertising, because if you put yourself in the shoes of a motivated seller on Facebook, they didn't go to Facebook to try to figure out how to sell their house. They went to Facebook to maybe procrastinate figuring out how to sell their house, or to just see what's up. And then they see an ad in their newsfeed that piques their interest, so they click on it. They come to a website. That's your chance to give them a reason to pay attention to you, right? So that person might fill out the form on their first visit, but they also might not. And data shows that many of them don't, because a lot of them are on their phone and they're going to come back later on their desktop to finish, right? And maybe in the meantime, they're talking to their husband or aunt or whoever else has a stake in the property, or they're just trying to decide, man, am I really too far behind on my taxes that I don't have any other options and I got to reach out to this investor? And so, you know, we retarget them in the meantime, but I guess what I'm getting at is you have that opportunity when they're on your site to make them remember you.
Yep.
And you got to make sure that you're taking that opportunity.
Dude, so really, really quick, what percentage are you seeing of your leads or the traffic's coming from mobile? I know it's vast majority on Facebook, but do you have an idea percentage?
Yeah, it's high, like 70-80%.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's another tidbit, y'all. As you're setting up your websites, make sure it's not just mobile friendly, but it's optimized to convert well on mobile.
Yes.
That's a whole nother call topic, but that's a biggie there, especially if you're in marketing on Facebook. It's got to be optimized for mobile. Not so mobile friendly, but optimized to perform well.
Yes, amen.
So, dude, let's dive into some of the campaign structure here. So let's say someone's going and they're going to start a Facebook ad campaign. They've already understood what their budget is. They're not going to emotionally change ads and this and that. They've got their budget locked in. What would you suggest people do first before they even set up an ad? You mentioned the pixel stuff before. Is that the first thing you think they should do?
Yeah, it is. I think so. You want to get your Facebook pixel is basically a little piece of code that will allow Facebook to keep track of who comes to your website. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, it's free. It's something that anyone can get that has an ad account on Facebook. And the minute you think, hey, I might want to do some Facebook marketing, either have someone place that pixel for you or place it yourself. On Carrot, it's really simple. It's just in the settings section. If you had someone build your website, then your developer should know where to place it, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason I say that is because you want to start keeping track of who's coming to your website. The earlier, the better. Because when I start a new campaign on Facebook for an investor, most investors, I would say, I do work with some, especially those who have been in the industry a little bit longer, that have a decent traffic flow already, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's through SEO or PPC or because they've just sent out so many mailers over time with their URL on there, whatever. And those investors tend to, their websites react to Facebook marketing faster than a brand new website. And that's because you are not only pushing new traffic to the website, but you're bringing old traffic back to the website as well, right? So getting that pixel in place allows you to start building this, I call it a retargeting pool.
Yep. So that's the first thing. So get that pixel in place. It's going to start tracking the visitors, and you can start retargeting. So what's next, man? What are some of the ad types that are working well for you guys right now?
So, I'm having great success with just single image ads. Carousel image ads are working well as well. And that's, for those of you that don't know, that's where you see an image and then you can kind of scroll inside of that ad and see multiple images, right? And then actually some cinemagraphs are working pretty well as well, which is, for those of you that don't know, it almost looks like a still image, but then there's something just sort of subtly moving. Those do well for capturing people's attention. Mm-hmm. And those also perform well. Facebook really likes video because they know that that's what their users like. So Facebook won't admit to this, but my personal opinion is that videos get higher relevance score kind of automatically mm-hmm. than an image does, meaning Facebook's going to favor those in their algorithms. So those are working well. I've tried images of people, and I think that seems to only work when it looks like a real person. So if it looks like stock photography, it's not going to work very well. Making sure that your images look like homes in your area, I think, is important. Which, so for example, if you're in Philadelphia, you got to make sure that the homes look like Philadelphia homes, right? And then, so moving on maybe to targeting really quickly, because I think, so when you're advertising on Facebook or I guess really anywhere, direct mail, et cetera, you've got to know who you're targeting, what message you're going to deliver to them, and then how you're going to deliver that message to them, right? Yeah. So when it comes to targeting, I approach that. That's probably the most sort of sophisticated piece of what I do. But I think for an investor, if you're just listening to this podcast and you say, all right, this is it, I'm going to go off and do some Facebook marketing, I would start broad and then narrow down. Right. So what I mean by that is Facebook has all of these parameters that you can select, you know, marital status and income and age and interests and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I found is going super narrow to begin actually is not as effective as going more broad to begin. So I'd recommend grabbing your geographic area. That's a huge one. Make sure you're not running ads to the entire United States. You're going to spend your money a lot faster. Yeah. Grab your geo area. I'd increase the age a little bit, meaning don't go after 18-year-old people unless in your area that's who's giving you deals. It's usually not though, right? Yeah. So I usually bump that up to like at least 30, sometimes 45. Like if down in the Florida market, for example, yep. I bump it higher, right? And then let that, and I know that sounds super broad, right? But let that run for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because what you're going to do is only, and then set that to pay per click. So make sure you're paying per click on that. And what that's going to do is that's going to get the attention of people who are interested in you and drive them to your website. And what I especially in the first month, I want to drive a lot of traffic to the website, Trevor, because I want to, number one, build that retargeting pool. But number two, I want to be able then to look at that data and say, okay, who in this area is coming to my website? Mm-hmm. What do they look like, right? And Facebook allows you to do a couple of things. You can look at some of the demographics of people clicking on your ads, but you can then also build what they call lookalike audiences.
Yep.
Right? And I might be going a little deep here, but
no, it's good, man.
I guess what I'm saying is
get as detailed as you want to. This is good stuff.
Going a little bit broad in the beginning allows us to avoid our own sort of propensity to be unintentionally discriminatory, right? So I'm going to pull a broad audience in, and then the people who actually click on that ad, I'm going to learn something from them, right? And then from there, I'm going to start going deeper. So start out broad and then narrow in, rather than starting out so narrow and then trying to go broad.
I love it. So I'm going to kind of recap some of the stuff that you've mentioned here just to solidify it in people's minds. And I've got a question for you. So on the ads, we're going to test all types of ads. I mean, you're not just saying, hey, just images are working or whatever. Videos are working great. Any certain types of videos that are working?
Yeah. So videos of testimonials. Mm-hmm. And just like a video, if you holding an iPhone or something and just introducing yourself. So it's the same thing on the website, right? Just tell them who you are. Mm-hmm. And I've got an investor client down in Tennessee, and he does this really well. He'll shoot videos in front of homes that he's just closed on and say, hey, here's a new home we closed on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll use those in the ads. And they work well because It's not scripted. He's, you know, it's not overly produced. He just looks like a real dude out there hustling and looking for homes, right? And so that works really well. And then actually having someone in the video with you doing a quick testimonial works. My caveat there is it's got to be short. Yep. I think some people, they do these long kind of 2-minute testimonials, which that's great. Put that on your website, but then you got to cut that down to like 15, maybe 30 seconds for an ad. You can't, you know, you put a 2-minute ad up on there, most people aren't going to watch it.
Yeah, they're going to scroll down by it. And dude, I want to kind of solidify this in people's minds that what we're talking about here, why those candid type videos or candid type pictures, the not the hand drawn whiteboard crap and not your stock photos. The candid stuff is working because someone's on Facebook to connect with people. It's called Facebook. It's not called stock photo Facebook. So make sure you're putting real faces on the real personalities, because that's why people are on Facebook in the first place. It connects with them, then drive them to the website, which then continues that conversation. The same face or similar faces, the same, you know, the same personality. So that's awesome. So then on targeting, start with your location, your city or whatever it is you're looking at doing. Dude, if you're looking to buy houses in multiple different markets, do you launch two different ad campaigns, one for Charlotte, North Carolina, and one for blah, 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 Florida?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, unless I have a really small budget.
Yeah. Okay.
Because if you have a really small budget, you may not have enough to split it up across. But I guess if your budget's real small, maybe you're not buying homes in multiple markets. But yeah, I think it's smart to run it in multiple, to run it separately in markets. Yeah.
Okay, sweet. So we got that. And then kind of adjust the age up a little bit, 30, 35, 40, whatever it is, depending on the market, and let it roll and see what happens. And do it per pay-per-click, not per impression. That's really important, especially since you're starting broad, because as you know better than anyone listening to this call, including myself, when we start broad and just do it per impression, that's kind of where some people can get in trouble with their budgets.
Yeah.
So the per click. So what happens next, man? So they've got the pixel on their site. They're driving traffic over there. Do they set up a second campaign for retargeting now? So they've got two campaigns, one for getting traffic there and one for recapturing it back.
Yes. Yeah. So then you should always be retargeting. Mm-hmm. You should never cut, if you're going to cut any campaign on a given month, it should never be a retargeting campaign, mm-hmm. because you've already paid to get those people to the site once. So it makes sense to, those are your most, that's your lowest hanging fruit right yeah. there, right? So you want to make sure that you're investing in that and getting them back to the site with retargeting. So what I'll do from there is then I start getting into lookalike audiences. Because I work with so many investors, I have the benefit of building kind of a master lookalike persona. Mm-hmm. So all the people that are converting on all these different in all these different cities, all these different motivated sellers, I have the benefit of kind of understanding what they look like, and then I can build a lookalike audience for this master list. But mm-hmm. an individual investor can do this too, and they do this a couple of ways. The first one is through their web traffic. So you can create a lookalike audience off of your web traffic, which is really powerful. And the other one is through your database. If you've got a database of past closed leads, you can use that to build a lookalike audience as well.
You need a certain amount to make it relevant?
Yeah, you need at least 100 matches inside of Facebook before it'll even let you build a lookalike audience.
Okay.
So that it depends on how many of your, you know, if your list is 100, you probably won't get 100 matches. Mm-hmm. But you need at least 100 matches before it'll let you build a lookalike audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude, so are there any markets, and you don't have to tell me the specific markets, but I'm just curious because Craigslist is a good example, right? Where Craigslist can work amazingly well in this market. This other market, it's like pulling teeth to try to get results out of it. Are you seeing any markets where, man, it's the Facebook marketing, the style, the way you're doing it, which is an insanely good way, is just not working? And you've had to go, man, it's just not going to work in this market.
No, not yet where it's not working. What I have seen that didn't really surprise me, because I've seen it before, is that some markets are just more expensive. Mm-hmm. That could be due to competition, but usually it's, especially on Facebook, it's primarily due to just the amount of advertisers in that market, not just real estate advertisers, just advertisers in general, right? Cause now you're competing for eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, man. So someone's running these campaigns. You've given some amazing detail here, dude. This is good stuff. This is really good stuff. So is there anything else people should be thinking about or looking at, or just kind of let that roll, check it once a week or once every other week? And what should they be looking for when they're checking it?
Well, I think that comes back to your calculator, Trevor. Mm-hmm. What they need to know how many leads they need to get in order to close a deal. And then they can look at what it's costing them to get a lead and kind of reverse engineer that. Right. And so what I'm looking at is if I'm that investor, I'm looking at, whether I'm on track for that mm-hmm. or not. right?
Simple.
And yeah, because the interesting thing about digital marketing and really all marketing in general, you're pretty much never done, mm-hmm. right? You almost, I can't even think of a scenario where you kind of wipe your hands and go, all right, we're done optimizing that thing, you know, your website, whatever it is, you're always optimizing it. And so what you want to stay out of is the trap of sort of obsessing and feeling like you're not doing it well enough, because there's always optimization to be done. So never, you know, you're always going to keep doing that, but you have to understand, have I reached that point? Have I found my vending machine? Mm-hmm. Right? Because once you found your vending machine, then you keep putting money in there while you try to make it better.
Dude, so one thing that's critical, and I know there's a ton of people who are not Carrot customers who listen to the Carrot Cast, which is amazing. And guys and girls, we love having you on here. In Carrot, of course, we have a lead source for your leads piped in there. So you can see the leads that came from Facebook. So it's really easy to go, okay, well, these leads came from Facebook. I closed that one into a deal. You know, that's my profit. I can attribute it back to that Facebook campaign. So what do you have a couple steps that people could take to have a lead source, have lead source data if they're using a custom site or something like that?
Yeah. So I actually use Google Analytics, for all of my tracking. And I do that with my Carrot customers and my non-Carrot customers just because I like to have the data in there as well. So Google actually has a free URL builder. Mm-hmm. If you Google like campaign URL builder, Google, you'll find it.
They just made it way better too. Like in the past month, it's way better.
Yeah. It's so easy to use. Now there is some stuff in there that you're going to have to kind of educate yourself on or watch a video or whatever. But so I use those. I use, those URL modifiers to track what's converting and what's bringing the best traffic. And I think the other thing that's important for people to consider, and Trevor, you and I talked about this briefly earlier, is the way attribution works on the web in most places. And I don't know if we have time to get into that, but that's important to know, because what's going to happen when you start running a Facebook campaign or even like a Google display campaign for that matter, you're going to start driving more traffic to your website. And when those people come back, the people who don't take action on the first visit, when they come back, they're going to find your website through any number of ways inside of your digital marketing ecosystem.
Yeah.
And so when that person fills out a web form, but they did it on their second visit, unfortunately, you lose some visibility in that funnel, right? But that's why it's important to think about, in my opinion, you got to think about your digital marketing as kind of a whole ecosystem. Now, certainly you look at each channel and what the ROI is, but you also look at it sort of as a whole. And I have some kind of personal things I do to help do that for myself, because there are some gray areas where you don't have the full attribution.
Oh, big time, man. We go through that here with Carrot all the time. It's kind of one of those banes of your existence that I don't know if there's ever going to be a real, like, here is the solution.
Right.
You just kind of have to go, okay, well, this is just the way that we're going to do it. And we just have to stick with this way, so it's constant and our data matches. And just to kind of clarify what we're talking about here for people not experienced with this is, let's say you're doing a Google pay-per-click campaign and Facebook retargeting and a Facebook ad, and you rank well in Google for search for your company name, let's say. So you do a Google pay-per-click campaign, drives them to your website, which you have the Facebook pixel on. They don't opt in right away. They go back. They go on a third day. They go onto Facebook. They see a Facebook ad there because it's your retargeting campaign. They click that puppy. They go back and they opt in. It's probably going to show that it came from Facebook, which
right.
it did. Facebook got them back. But they were originally introduced to you from the Google ad. So you're going, okay, what do we attribute the profit? You're like, I don't know. And one of them assisted the other. They both worked in the ecosystem, like Kylie's saying. You want to take it to an extreme level. They click the Google AdWord ad, go to your website. They go to Facebook. They see your retargeting ad. They click that. They don't opt in still. They're not ready. They go talk with their family or whatever about selling it. 3 weeks later, you know, they see your ad on Facebook again, and they're like, well, shoot, let me go Google the name of this company. Now they go to Google the name of your company. They land on your website from Google Organic,
yeah,
and that's going to show up as a Google search lead. But right, unless you talk with them, which we do this oftentimes with our customers or even with our real estate investor clients, is like, make sure you're talking with, hey, I'm just kind of curious, how did you guys find out about us? Well, shoot, you know, we saw your Facebook ad, but it shows up a Google search lead. So you know that they probably went back to search and then they search your company name. So make sure you're asking those leads those questions. That's exactly the way that I do it. Man, I'm just curious. I'm always curious how people find out about us. How'd you find out about us? And they'll tell you some pretty good data.
And the data can help you with that too, Trevor, just really quickly, because I have this conversation with a lot of my investors talking about attribution, you know. And one of the best things I can do is look at how many leads they were getting or what traffic to their website looked like prior to initiating the Facebook campaign, and then looking at it post Facebook campaign.
Cool.
Right. And then you can say, okay, look at the difference here, right? Traffic is up 6x and leads are up 2x or whatever it is. So let's decide what percentage of that we're going to attribute, or let's decide what percentage of leads we're going to attribute to that change.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, I could talk about this stuff for another hour. Man, is there any other kind of parting comments you have for people that are either going to get started with this themselves, or let's say they're going to hire it out for someone? Is there any parting comments you have?
Good question, man. I think my parting comment is that Facebook works. Mm-hmm. You know, people are the best way to think about it is that's where people hang out. Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things when I'm talking to like someone who wants to get into marketing or ask me for advice, you know, where do I get started? How do I create this campaign? One of the first things I say to them is find out who you want to talk to and then find out where those people hang out and then go there. Right. And the beautiful thing about Facebook, you know, we like to kind of joke and say, oh, you know, it's a time waster, and it definitely can be. But the reality is that's where people hang out.
Yep.
Right. And so if you want to get in front of people, that's a great place to go, because there are a lot of people there. So if you do it intelligently and strategically, then I think it can be a game changer for people. Really, I do.
Dude, so what's next for you? What's next for you? You're a month into your entrepreneurship journey. You're in the honeymoon phase still, which you probably will be for several more months. Man, what's next for Kylie Newbold in the journey of entrepreneurship?
So I'm loving this. I'm continuing to build. My business is growing every month, which is exciting. I also have an investment in a small retail product business. So hoping that grows, and looking for more opportunities to do some sort of investing. And then you know, there's some kind of personal hobbies that when you're working in a startup, you sometimes lose yourself, right? And I've done that now in two different startups, and it's been so rewarding. But I'm realizing now that as I build this path for myself, I'm being unwilling to not build that in as part of my journey, right? So I live in Salt Lake City. I have these beautiful mountains around me. So, you know, trail running and taking my family up hiking. And so that's really important to me. And then the last thing, I really want to get involved in helping others along the way too, any way that I can. You know, if I can be a benefit to anybody, I want to do that. And I genuinely mean that. It's really rewarding to be able to be impactful or to help someone else along the way. And I certainly don't think I'm at the top of the building, but I've come up a few floors, and I always believe that part of our duty is to send the elevator back down, you know, to go on this analogy of going up floors and continue to climb the floors myself.
I love it, dude. That's a good way to look at it. Love it. Man, thank you for coming on here and sharing. You shared a lot of stuff. You shared some stuff that I'm sure a lot of people are like, man, I'm surprised you shared that detail, which is really cool. And dude, I just appreciate you hopping on here, and I hope we have the chance to meet each other in person here the next year. I'm gonna make sure it happens. We're not that far away from each other, so we're gonna find a way to meet each other in person this year, man. And I just want to continue working with you. So I'm grateful for you, and thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks, Trevor. Appreciate it.
with that, guys and gals, now you know exactly what you need to be doing on Facebook to drive motivated seller leads. And you can use the same thing, like we said, for cash buyers and other types of leads too. So one thing I forgot to mention on this podcast as I was on there talking with Kylie was where you guys can get a hold of him. But you guys can find him online at silverstreetmarketing.com. That's silverstreetmarketing.com. You can connect with him there, learn about his services if it's going to be a fit for you. And one thing I want to throw out there, guys and gals, is that when you're going to work with someone at the caliber of Kylie, it's not going to be cheap. So don't be surprised if you guys are looking to reach out to have him run Facebook ads for you. It's not going to be cheap at all, okay? It's probably going to be more expensive than you're thinking, but that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing because he's able to then limit the amount of clients he works with, provide amazing results for them. And if you're not able to get in to work with Kylie, reach out to us directly. Okay, reach out to us directly through our support here at Carrot and let us know that that's a service that you're looking for, because we're always looking to fill the gaps of the services that we have or the services that we don't have so we can best help you. And that's one of the big ones that we've been hearing about a lot this past year is, hey, can you guys manage my Facebook marketing? Okay, so that's something that is in the hopper that we're kicking the idea around, and we'll see how much demand there is. Just let us know how much demand there is through support@oncarrot.com. And we'd love to hear it, all right? Guys, check out our other episodes of the Carrot Cast. Okay, we're on episode 31 now, which these episodes have flown by. We've had thousands and tens of thousands of listeners download these episodes. We've had tons of comments, tons of ratings and reviews. If you haven't left one yet, head over to iTunes, head over to Stitcher, head over to Google Play, wherever you watch these, or on YouTube, and leave us a rating, leave us a review. That's what helps us validate that we're doing the right thing for you here, okay? And it also is awesome. It gets more exposure for our podcast, so more people can kind of come into our fold, and we can help them with, fulfill that mission of their life the way that we're hopefully helping you fulfill yours, okay? And if you guys are going to be in San Diego, so the time that this is going to be aired is going to be close to the time that I'm going to be in San Diego, which is going to be toward the end of this month. Let me look at my calendar really quickly here. Type Google calendar. I probably really should put this as a shortcut on my on my browser. So I've got Google calendar here. Let's pull it up. I just want to see the dates that I'm going to be in San Diego. But I'm going to be in San Diego the 19th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. So hit me up personally, just email us there in our website, or just personally to me. Hit me with an email at trevor@oncarrot.com. Let me know that you're going to be in San Diego at that time, January 19th through the 22nd, 2017. And I'd love to see if we can connect, okay? I'd love to connect with our customers, our listeners, and just shake your hand and put a name to the face, all right? So guys and gals, go out there and implement what we taught if this is the right timing in your business, okay? And if you're not able to implement it, let us know. We may, like I said, see how we can start a service doing this sometime this year if there's enough demand for it. But either way, go out there. Do not let hurdles get in your way. Do not let tech and marketing issues hold you back from building the life you want to build and making the impact you want to make with your life and with your business. All right. Until next time, guys and gals, have an amazing rest of the week.